What is happening? Welcome to another episode of The Craft. My name is Nick Pollock. And look, we are at the All-Star break. And what better than to bring in three of my favorite people in the industry. Eric Samulski, of course, from On The Corner podcast, my colleague at NBC Sports, said, well, why don't we do like a collaborative episode and bring in Paul Spohr to talk about just reflecting on the first half and looking at the second half. And, you know, I said, guys, I can probably get one more, but I don't know if you'll ever pick up the phone. And finally, you know, Saris did. You know, thank you so much for being here. Paul, Eric, thanks for making this happen.
I like to bring people together, Nick.
Yes. Paul, are you staying warm by the fire?
Oh, absolutely. You know what? I'm not, because I'm at my sister's and my brother-in-law watching their dog Dalmatian, and they keep this place frozen, y'all. And it's on a schedule. So every 5 hours, I got to go change it. 66.
I'm honestly surprised. We're watching on video, of course, on YouTube right now. I'm sure you are. And you're not wearing the teal hoodie, which you should be wearing.
I changed it for you. Yes, I had it on. Wow. I put my Fangraphs shirt on. I want to look a little bit more professional.
Nice.
We have the classic sleeper in the bus here, of course. Eno Saris, good to see you. Did you have a nice 10-mile run or so since I last...
What's coming up after this?
Of course it is. But anyway, guys, we have a fun podcast ahead for you. We're going to be reflecting on everything that we've... the takes we had in the preseason, discussions of who's going to regress in the second, of who we like the most. And let's really start with, of course, our favorite thing, the victory laps that we should never have as analysts. Victory laps, no, bad, because once you take them, you're going to be tripping, right? However, we're going to do it a little bit. And Eric, I'm going to start with you. Great. Who is the guy that you would say is your best preseason call? Could be a fade, could also be a hit.
Every year I write an article on a starting pitcher who's going undrafted in 12-team formats, who I think could wind up in the top 25. And this year, I had two names in that article. One, Eno, we'll talk about later. And the other was Parker Messick.
Nice.
I will say that part of the reasoning on Parker Messick was, hey, people don't think he's going to be in the rotation, and that's why he's being drafted this late. And it's more just like, how long do you think Logan Allen can hold off Parker Messick? The answer was never, not at all.
Not at all.
I forgot about Logan Allen. I just have already forgotten.
Right. And so,
which one?
And I guess both now. And so Parker Messick was somebody that I was drafting early and often and hoping with, you know, those final picks and hoping he won a rotation spot. And then he did, and he has been great. And I chatted with him at the All-Star break, very, very nice dude. And he's going to have some quotes in an article I'm doing coming out about why the changeup is the most undervalued pitch in baseball. And then I'll also say, I even prior to the injury was pretty heavily fading Treya Savage, who had been linked into that, like, I know Eno referred to it as the hype seven, I believe, but those young arms, and the Savage never felt like somebody who fit in that group of like Burns, Mizorowski, McClain, etc. I'm not patting injuries, but I will just say, like, the location issues I think have been present even now that he's healthy, and those were some of the concerns in the preseason.
And definitely, but guys, I gotta say, Eric was back patting my injury for the Achilles, and I couldn't believe him for it.
I was not back patting. I said, Nick, I saw it coming.
You shouldn't play tennis.
He called it.
The fact that you were wearing a U.S. Open tennis T-shirt.
Why do you think I wore it?
To then rupture your Achilles. I was like, it's a lot. There's a lot going on.
All right. So on that same topic, actually, we'll say that there were a couple of those guys, and it's really nice for us, I think, to reflect maybe later on about the sixth man of the rotations and actually seeing how many of the guys actually did pan out. Parker Messick is one of them. Connelly Early, before he had his injury moment right now, there is someone else that I will be talking about, but I bet there are maybe two or three others that actually did win that job in camp. And it showcases the importance of following pitch usage and who's performing in camp. Spohr, I'm going to go to you now. Yes. You have a fade as the thing that you want to backpat.
Yeah, I felt pretty good about my Shota Imanaga fade. I feel pretty good about it currently happening because I also put a little twist on it thanks to you. I said, if you want to get them, for the early season, because you're talking about the weather stuff, I bought in on that. I'm like, okay, I agree. I think he can be good, but it's a ticking time bomb because these homers aren't going away. And so he's going to trick you again like he did in his rookie year. And that's exactly how it's played out. So I gave you the hat tip even as I was still fading him. And I even got him on one of my best balls. I'm like, okay, I'll take that shot there. It was a decent enough price. But I was out on him as like a top pitcher or one of those mid-tier sort of uprising guys because I just continue to worry about this home run rate in Wrigley, and it's going absolutely nowhere. It's devastating. It's almost 2. It was 1.9 last year. It's 1.8 this year. And yes, the whip certainly helps. Even the 1.12 this year, which is a career high for him, that's still pretty good. But I just think Shota Imanaga gets overdrafted. And as we're seeing with his 4.17 ERA, the early season work cannot protect you from the bombs that will come once the weather heats up. So just not a guy I'm ever going to pay the top price for.
Yeah, I mean, there is something to be said that we had 4 games of Imanaga, 5 through 8 runs with 2 home runs, 3, 4. So I'm doing quick math here. It's 12 home runs in 4 games. But since then, so he had 5 home runs in 5 games and a 2.81 ERA, 1.22 whip, and a 24% K rate.
Do you think that's a new skill or running hot, though?
It's possible. I think it's more in skill just because of the 92 mile per hour velocity, but you're absolutely right that it's still one of those things you don't feel fully confident that he's going to not have that 3 home run game once again. So it's still one of those what's going to happen situations for Imanaga.
Especially with those blotchy balls.
Well, right. So, yeah. Would you even say that, like you said, 1.9 last year with home per 9, 1.8 this year? That does showcase some sort of skill increase considering you didn't have the blotchy ball. Is that what we're calling it now? Instead of bocce ball, it's blotchy ball?
Blotchy. They had a manufacturing error and they're splotchy balls. The ball is now flying with the same drag as it has in 2019. We're getting close to 2019 levels on the drag on the ball. So we're going to see a lot of homers in the second half, I think.
Oh, man.
Paul's getting kicked off this podcast real quick.
We've got the blotchy ball. We've got the dragon ball now. But, who is your backpack?
Oh, well, I didn't know that Eric and I shared it, but it's just awesome that we both loved Braxton Ashcraft going into the season. You know, I just love curveballs, actually. I think that curveballs, a really excellent curveball can lead to longevity in the game. I love Charlie Morton, Adam Wainwright types that kind of provided the roadmap for like a young guy with a great curveball to kind of put the pitches around it. You know, I think that even with Bradish's struggles, we're seeing that where it's like his fastball's not that great, but when he gets going, he has the constellation of pitches around the curveball. When Braxton Ashcraft added that sinker, he is now 3rd in chase rate in the big leagues and 9th in zone rate. He's the only person who's top 10 in both of those things. So he gets you in the zone, he gets you outside of the zone, and the sinker was a big deal for that because I think it just gave him another hard weapon in the zone. So he didn't have to always be slider four seam. So now he can have 3 pitches in the zone. You can do the curve in the zone, the curve out. I mean, I think it's all there for great longevity, other than the fact that he's been injured very often in strange ways.
Now, Spore, I can't be there to give you a high five. I'm so sorry.
I was raising my hand so as to not interrupt. Spore,
what would you say?
A small secondary backpack for myself here, because when I was reading the Ashcraft tidbit that I wrote and giving him some love, I also gassed up the Pirates. And my final line was, keep expectations in check, but we might not have to immediately forego wins when drafting Pirates SPs this year. God, I'm smart.
Oh, man. Still smart.
I just want to jump in because I think the Ashcraft thing for me too was a nice lesson in I had set up these parameters for this article of like searching for things that pitchers do well that I like in terms of pitcher success. And a lot of that, you know, I'm going to do a lot more, focus a lot more also on, you know, strikes than I did before. And that's what led me to like a lot of Yuri Perez and Edward Cabrera and things like that, which didn't quite work out. But you know, like Eno was talking about secondaries that miss bats, multiple fastball variations, things like that. And Braxton Ashcraft checked all these boxes. And I just kept coming back to like the four seamer just isn't a really good foundational pitch. And so he had checked all these boxes that I liked that ostensibly should have made him a pitcher I targeted. But I kept kind of like balking a little bit. There was something about it that just, you know, I put it in the article, but I was like, I maybe have more confidence in some of these other guys hitting. And I think that that's a lesson for me, was also like, if you're doing the work and you have your parameters set, you have your things that are, you know, you're looking for, and a name pops up that is surprising to you, or you maybe don't, you know, want to believe in, it's like, trust the work a little bit rather than trying to talk yourself out of something. And another thing that I think is important for Ashcraft, because we're seeing it with other pitchers, is like, when at the All-Star game, he mentioned that him being in the bullpen last year really helped him learn how to throw strikes, because when you come out of the bullpen, you can't fall behind. You can't really fall behind ever, but you definitely can't when you're coming out of the bullpen and if there's runners on. And we've seen a fair number of starting pitchers in recent years pitch better after stints in the bullpen. Reed Detmers last year, Ian Seymour has had multiple stints in the bullpen and looks good. We can't say Griffin Jacks because he's been in the bullpen. He wasn't a starter who went into the bullpen. But that's another thing to look at, I think, next year, is some of the younger guys who maybe struggled a little bit with finding the zone, who spent time in the bullpen and are now getting a chance to start again. I think some of those guys see a real boost in performance, because you have to learn in the bullpen to use your best pitch more often and to fill up the zone. And then they carry those things over into the rotation. And I think it really does help.
Definitely. So we were really saying, like, hey guys, we're going to do a quick, we got this.
But I got one more thing I want to say.
Please, of course you do.
Real quick.
Yeah.
One thing that I laughed after we said that, by the way.
One thing I like about what Eric's saying is, pitching is full of risk. And he's saying, at one point he was saying, like, don't talk yourself out of someone. You know, I think that on some level you have to embrace the risk. I'm not saying injury risk. I'm not saying, you know, you have to be aware of all the different risks that can compound. But, you know, one of the things I said that I want to call back on that's similar to that is, I said about the hype 7, get one, you know,
right.
And
don't get all five, don't get five of them.
But if you
don't get a bunch of them, you know, like if you did get five of them, you did
this
really
year,
awesome.
Yes, but like but we know,
yeah,
that
you have to think about past years.
Like that. Right.
Yeah, and so I
but yeah,
one thing that I did
hard,
do this year that I haven't done in the past was I pushed the hype 7 into the 20. So I had I had them starting around 21 through 30, and I think that a lot of people did buy those pitchers based on my ranking. So I'm not going to take credit for all of them because they were all amazing. I didn't expect that.
Yeah, where'd you put
Imai? But yeah. After the hype 7, at least. Thank God.
I know. I'm messing with you.
So
we're
a couple
things. We're not going to be doing that right now.
If I really had to say, like, preseason call, I just wanted to note the general strategy that I have. Do not draft pitchers. Wait on it. Absolutely just held this year. I mean, even look at, like, the top rank is, of course, you have any order of Crochet, Scooble, Skeens. You're not really too happy with that at the moment. Skeens is still great and everything, but but even then, you've got your Hunter Browns, your Max Free getting hurt. You have Brian Wu not performing as well. You have You have so many that are just, like, not worth it. And if you waited until the 20s, for example, I would say my biggest thing was the guys that I circled. When you get to, you know, the 6th, 7th round, 8th round, who should you start going after? Well, it's Joe Ryan. It's Cam Schlittler, who I had at 20 at the top of the hype 7, right? Jesus Lizardo
really
was in
good.
There. Those are that to me is really the takeaway that I have. I'm happiest about. And then the other one is I cheated, because we were talking about this before the podcast. One of the things is, like, we have these arguments in October and January, whatever, about this guy's going to be better than this, or this guy's going to be worse. And so many times those pitchers are worse or they're better due to circumstances that we have no rationale for believing in, right? That is, we don't know that they're going to add 2 ticks of velocity. Mm-hmm. We don't know that they're all of a sudden going to lose their changeup. We don't know those things. And unless those arguments come with it, then it's just kind of like, oh, good job, buddy. You know, like, it's not really something that I feel we should pat our backs on, but I will still take it for Justin Wroblewski, because I was like, Sasaki is bad. It will not stay in this rotation, or it'll be a 6-man. And Wroblewski has to be in there somehow.
Everybody else is
or maybe
be
like Snell isn't ready, or maybe Glasnow isn't ready. Justin Wroblewski
those
was
are both correct.
70 times last year. They're going to run him into the ground because they don't carry on their playoff rotation. And I was like, man, I love the fact that he's throwing like 4 or 5 pitches and he's got this wide mix. And what does he do? Become one of the luckiest pitchers in baseball. has like a 15% strikeout rate in his first two months and is only doing four seamer slider, and it makes no sense, but it worked. So I'm taking that one.
So what
I'm
did you make
check on that? Yes.
What did you make of him like showing some strikeout stuff in the All-Star game? I know it's a one thing, he's amped up, but then them talking about
what you like about doing,
you know, opting for the three and out stuff. You know what it reminds me a bit of is like, I know it's right-handed, left-handed, but like just in terms of approach, Jordan Zimmerman in his peak when he flirted with some big strikeout totals, but then went back to that three and out approach more often. And it hurt us for fantasy, but obviously he lived with it for several years. That's what this kind of reminds me of. Although it is extreme. What did you say his strikeout rate is 16?
Right, I mean, it was something like 15% the first 2 months. He's gone up a little bit recently. He's actually increased the velocity
27 over the last 30. So, yeah. And he's added the velo. I think you should still take your flowers on that because he is now becoming who you thought he would be. I mean, he's
Now we're talking about be terrible in the second half. What are you talking about?
He's throwing a splitter.
He's gonna have a 3 ERA and one win in the second half. Somehow.
Yeah, right. That's what it's gonna be. Absolutely. As far as what Wroblewski did, I think in the All-Star game, like he pumped it up to 97 up and away to right-handers and got whiffs that way. And what we've seen a lot of the season has been like 93 and 94 on that four seamer a ton. So I think that's really what that was. As Sport gives us a lovely tour of his sister's place, by the way. It's a really
I took the dogs out home. So that maybe they would.
We're gonna move on here. Who was the worst preseason call that you guys have had? I could probably share these with a lot of you guys, and I'm just gonna say mine quickly. I know Eno. Oh man, okay, fine. I'll choose one. I'm gonna say that mine. Each one of yours is also mine. Okay. So I'm going to just say Bubba Chandler. I'm shocked. I'm just absolutely just blown away at how bad this is. And it's not even injury. It's someone who's throwing strikes. He had that minor league moment last year, but it seemed very strange. And obviously because he wasn't called up and there was even like reports about his mental space was not what it should be at the time. And like how, I don't know. I still don't really know why you're just bad, and I just am not. I checked March 25th. I have him at 31, guys. It was a terrible take. So that is easily my worst one. But if I wanted to give one that is not among all of you, I would probably say Kyle Bradish at 19. Even though he's coming back, 19 as your SP1 in some cases, not good. It wasn't enough. It wasn't the strikeout stuff until way too long. So much debating about it.
Put me in that one, by the way. I had him 17. Let's bring Eric on that because that's Eric's guy. But like, how much did you guys?
I didn't even notice that it was your guy.
That's okay. We'll talk about it now.
What's the point of a rundown, Nick? You know what I mean?
I read it. I saw Eric, it in front of me, and then I just completely ignored it.
I know for me, I think I just took the six starts last year too seriously and didn't really give enough credence to the fact that he's still coming back from TJ. I was like, well, that was taken care of last year, which was kind of stupid. Wish casted a little bit with a favorite player of mine. I like Bradish quite a bit. So how do you think that?
It's also maybe like a little bit like Bieber in that way. You know, like Bieber came back. Yes. And so you're like, oh, he came back. And
that's exactly it.
We just got earlier news on Bieber in the offseason being like, oh, it's not right. I mean, I think it is a lesson that like, you know, we'd like the guys who come back and show us.
Same with Yuri, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. We like the guys who come back and show us that they're good, but like that does not mean they're good. Like it's just all figured out.
Like sometimes it is like hurt a different way. Like it was with Sheever the first time, like it was with Reagan's in the second half or so. With
just trying to put him in the top 20, half,
right? It's
you know
entering the season. Yes, that is the rule, and now it's
okay, it's easy so to say now.
How about just a little bit of like it is not a great fastball,
right?
So like. Yeah. Not only did he have like sort of a health-based risk, but there's also this risk of like he comes back and it's not a great fastball and he has to sort of refigure out how to put things around a curveball.
Eric, how about you
think that? I think that was the issue for the when I reflect. So I had him 15th. And so
17,
think like you, I think he'll be fine the rest of the way. And you know, a 3.61 ERA isn't anything that you're kicking yourself about, but the whip is bad.
Yeah, he's not losing your league, even with that pick price. Right. Like, if you're losing, it's because the rest of your team stinks.
Right. The whip hasn't been there. The strikeout rate hasn't been there. And I think that is the thing that I'm coming back to, is it is one thing to say, okay, he returned from injury. He made six starts and looked good. So we should bet on his health. so far, that bet has paid off. The bet that Kyle Bradish will come back and be healthy is a bet that has paid off. What I think I was betting on too much was, and not saying he was going to duplicate a 37% strikeout rate, but his last full season, he was a 25% strikeout rate pitcher.
Yeah.
So this is all the stuff I was 37%, but then I was like, but he was almost 33% back in 2024, but even that was only 8 starts. So you're using a strikeout rate sample, or not using it, but looking at a strikeout rate sample from 2 years that are abbreviated. If you had penciled Bradish in for a healthy season with a decent ERA and a strikeout rate around 25%, which was kind of who he was before getting hurt, you wouldn't be that upset about the draft pick, but you also would have drafted him somewhere in the 30s, not somewhere in the top 20 overall starters. And so I think that's where I'm kicking myself, is not that I used the small sample size to suggest that he was healthy, but that I didn't pay enough attention to the fact that the last time he was fully healthy, he was not really a swing and miss pitcher.
Right. Well, so the thing about Bradish, I think, is such an interesting, for me, this is the conversation I have internally a ton, is what is it that makes Bradish tick, right? As Zeno said, not the fastball and the sinker. It's about, cool, you have to be dominating not just with the curveball, but also with your slider, right? So when you're making a draft pick on him, it's not really like, okay, am I expecting the 25% strikeout rate or this ERA or that whip? What I'm doing is saying, do I think he's going to have those breaking balls for the heavy majority of this season during his games? And that wasn't the case for a long time, right? This season, it was in and out. He wasn't getting strikes with them. One was working, one wasn't. And that, you know, I know it's very binary. It's very like, how, what is the actual percentage of that? But if you wrap your head around it that way, it can be a lot clearer as far as just, you know, making this analysis for yourself of like, where should I be drafting him? How much should I be swaying that I do believe he's going to have the feel for those? And looking back, I mean, he had them. He had them the end of last year, right? And he had them before the surgery. And I would still heavily favor that probability. You know, he didn't have it for 2 months. I'm curious how it works in the second half. But at the end of the day, I am going to sit here and say, yeah, if you took Bradish as your SP1 because I put my rankings at 19 or wherever it was, like, that is not fun. I'm going to move on from this one. But before I do, we're going to hear Eno and Paul's the preseason takes that they don't like. They don't want to admit, but they will because they're good people after this break. Eno, what do you got for us? Who was your preseason take that you're just like, oh gosh, please forget this?
I didn't even have to say it, dude. Everybody knows Tatsuya Imai. I just looked at it. What's amazing is he has a 22% K minus BB in the last 30 days. So, you know, maybe he'll figure it out still. But I think that one thing that I did wrong that I would like to make sure I do differently in the future is do a better translation of what movement in Japan looks like in America, because the balls are different. And so I think his fastball, which had some interesting comps, like Luis Castillo's four seam, which is not a great pitch, but it's, you know, it's been a pitch that's been okay in the past. You know, it turned out to be more dead zone than that.
Right.
And I think it was just, you know, the ball's different. And that difference, I guess, is also something that I'd like to highlight with Japanese pitchers coming over. Some guys take to it. Some guys, you know, are fine with the new ball. Some guys, you know, get better splitter movement in America than they ever did in Japan. But it seems increasingly risky to take a Japanese pitcher without, especially the most dominant numbers. Like when Yu Darvish came over, he had dominant numbers over there. Right. When Imai and Sasaki came over, they were already like, well, what about innings and what about walks? Like Imai walked a lot of people his first 3-4 years in the league. Like he wasn't a guy that just, you know, perennial Cy Young type over there. And so you have to remember that, like, guys coming over, you know, you still want to look at some of their on-field results too, and you want them to be super dominant, especially if you're going to invest in them heavily.
There's always one every year though that comes from overseas and dominates. It wasn't Imai, it was Foster Griffin. So there is something. It's like, if we treat it like that though, if we say, okay, we were putting
he's already used
the price of Imai at like top 40, that's not it. You know, you should look at all of them and go, all right, hold on a second. Let's try one of these in the '80s or something like that. And hopefully one of these works out. If you remember, Cody Ponce, that was fun for one inning or two, whatever it was.
Even more than that, like almost a full, like he was looking pretty good. I was really excited about him. I felt terrible for him, man.
Oh gosh.
Two and a third brilliant innings and then poof.
Oh my gosh. Oh my God. I'm looking at this now. I'm seeing Jack on the 100 on March 25th. Jeez. Okay. Anyway, Spore, you know, we're all on the same page with you here. Who was your guy?
First off, thanks for Emi. You know, last time I listened to you, you've never gotten one right. I'm just kidding. You did sell me on him, and I was right there with you. I was like, yeah, this guy's really interesting. And then I'm going to answer my guy, but I'm curious how much you put on the whole like transition to the States that he talked about having trouble with too. How could we possibly know something like that? I think maybe that's something you can add a buffer in for. And if a player is at a certain price point, maybe you give them similar to what I do with the, I know Glenn Colton and Rick Wolf popularized it with their smart system, giving that first year of a big contract, maybe a first year overseas, maybe just be out on them generally.
Their price is going to raise if they come over and they're great. I mean, I thought that Emi was cheap enough.
That's true.
I had that baked in. I had him. Where did I have him preseason? Just so that people know how bad it was.
Oh, man. I had him at 39, by the way.
I think
that's... I'll take Castillo at 65, so I feel okay.
I had Emi 31.
Yeah.
Jinx.
But, so that's if he was in his 50s today, I wouldn't be apologizing so much. But the other thing is, though, that like I thought from the way that he like the way that he took interviews and stuff, that like he was going to transition well, because he was like, I wanted to take with the Astros. I want to be on my own team. I wanted to make my own name. I was like, this guy's a bulldog.
That's and I
the Ian totally Khan method.
Yeah, right. He did not seem like a bulldog on the mound when he got
no, no. absolutely not. But this guy did. My guy that I like, I think he is a bulldog on the mound. I thought he was going to be at the very least. I thought George Kirby would be a whip asset. Okay, your ERA might be a little bit high. He hits the zone a lot. I could see the homers going up a little bit. He was at 1-1 last year. He's actually brought that down. I'm like, the one thing he's going to do is whip 132 this year. Nightmare. You know, he's not even completely falling apart. But I think his margins are a bit smaller because he's not a dominant pitcher right now. You know, we saw the 26% K rate last year that I thought he could hold or even maybe build upon with a few improvements or changes. But no, he's down to 22%. So it's a bland 3.76 ERA, 1.32 whip for a guy that I had in my top 10. I really, really love George Kirby. I like how good his command and control can be when he's at his best. And I thought he could be an ace in the making. It has not materialized. Last year was derailed a bit by injury, but even that didn't fully get going. He had his flashes, but I'm like, okay, a year after that now, coming in healthy, he's ready to go. And it's been disappointing. I'm not off of him completely, but this is a guy, like I said, I had him, you know, very high. I thought George Kirby was going to be an absolute stud at number 12, and he's not giving you top 12 returns. You know,
I could even say that George Kirby is part of my bounce back crew, because
I could absolutely see it.
You know, you guys might know the whole thing with Yamamoto and me, and like the one thing I want him to do, and he's started to finally do it, which is high four seamers, and he's finally getting whiffs on that four seamer every so often now. I'm like, thank you so much. The thing with George Kirby is like, can you please just get your sweeper down in a way, and then your sinkers inside to right-handers and four seamers up, like actually having that proper attack. And he's starting to do it, like actually getting a bit of it there. So slow and steady, it might actually be George Kirby's second half, might be a good buy low. I mean, he's not going to have a 10 hip or 9 for the full year, right? Like that's silly.
And I think you can get like a real discount, not cheap, not stealing him from somebody, but a real discount relative to where he was being drafted. If you're in a trade league, I think George Kirby can be had a nice price. And I agree, I am still in on him, but based on where we're at right now, I do regret having him 12 because he's not giving you top 12 returns, like I said.
Well, all right. So
one
now
thing,
we're
gonna, one thing on Kirby real quick.
Eric. Oh, sorry. You know, yeah.
Is just that when I make a checklist for what I want from a young pitcher, Eric was talking about his checklist, and one of the things was like good fastball, like good secondary. I'm not sure that he has either really. Yeah. He does not have like a dominant pitch. He's like a pretty good fastball, pretty good slider, pretty good curveball, but there's no dominant pitch. His dominant thing is his command. Now,
exactly
that I think still exists, and that's still something to bank on. So I still a soft buy low I agree on. But the other thing is the one out pitch that he had that what has been taken away from him is the high four seam. Mm-hmm. And that's a tricky one because you need people to chase it. You can't miss and give up homers. So you have to be kind of outside the zone. And we've been dealing with this with Kirby forever. Remember when it was like, oh, I'm too in the zone. Remember that he had like bad 2 months and he's like, I'm too in the zone, my four seam. I have to throw it outside the zone, you know, and everyone's like, oh, it's Kirby broken. And then he had a good second half. We all forgot about it. But that was about the four seam above the zone. Guess what happened then? Last year they had a preparation strike zone where they shrunk the strike zone in preparation for this year, and then this year the strike zone's even smaller, and where it's smallest at the most is the top of the zone. Kirby has been a top rail guy with the four seam, so I mean he's just been attacked by rule changes in some ways, and
they're targeting
him. I'm not sure what the way out is unless he like refines the splitter and starts throwing that some more, which was okay at times, or he refines the curveball that's had better stuff plus numbers in the past. I'm not sure what it is, but he does.
Just get your sinker inside a righty's. It's so simple. He's throwing every – it's like the old Lance McCullers problem. George Kirby is New throwing Brewer. Pitches that land in the same spot down ever. And away. And it was what Lance McCullers would do. He would do a backdoor sinker that landed down and away, and then he would throw a curveball that lands down and away, then a changeup that lands down and away. And it's like it doesn't matter what it is. I'm just looking in the same spot of the zone. Right now, Kirby's throwing backdoor sinkers and upstairs four seamers and then sweepers that don't go out of the zone. It's all the same spot. They're all just leaning away on him. And if you throw sinkers inside, you're going to get fewer hits. You're going to get quicker at bats. You're going to get through games faster, first of all. And then now that sweeper that starts inside, you can actually get guys getting fooled on it because they don't know if it's that sinker coming in out of the hand right away. It's right there. And it blows my mind that to right-handers, his inside location is 37th percentile. Like it's 30% of the time he throws it inside to right-handers. That's terrible. It's terrible.
This podcast is like a therapy session for me because I went back and I was like, I pulled up my first pitch Arizona presentation where I did what makes the top 25 starting pitcher. And I pulled up my George Kirby page. And I remember Paul asked me a question during the presentation about what could make Kirby a top 10 starting pitcher, because I said that George Kirby was a fringe top 25 starting pitcher. My problems with George Kirby were that his swinging strike rate to right-handed hitters was very low, that his best swinging strike rate pitch to righties was a slider, which didn't have a swinging strike rate that matched top 25 starting pitchers. He also didn't command his fastball well in the zone, which, you know, Nick had pointed out a lot of that was also him trying to elevate the four seam fastball.
Dead zone.
I just didn't necessarily believe that Kirby had the strikeout upside. So I labeled him a fringe top 25 starting pitcher. And then my last starting pitching rankings heading into the regular season, I ranked him 12.
No.
I'm going to take full blame for that.
And I'm like, what do you do? Like, why do the work, do a whole presentation, and
believe
then
it.
The push comes to shove?
Yeah, you like, nailed it.
I don't know. I don't know.
Eric, and I'm like, George Kirby. And you're like, all right, okay, fine.
And that's so all my Tout Wars team, I waited on starting pitching, and I grabbed George Kirby and Cole Reagans, and I was like, I feel good about not spending pitching.
Oh man, I'm gonna move on to the next one here. And I got
yes, I'm gonna check in on the rundown real quick. We've done two out of eight.
Awesome.
Eight things we're supposed to
do. Oh, I already told you guys we're gonna get to like four, but I'm gonna choose the ones that I like the most here.
Well, to be fair, Nick, the last few ones are gonna go quick. They're not gonna have as much analysis.
Yeah. Okay. So.
I picked the same guy for the last two, so that'll be easy.
Call you guys out on this, by the way. We do a rundown. Which, by the way, if you know, listen to any other podcast I've ever done, no run
going, Nick.
So Eric put this together, and I was like, all right, you know what? I'm gonna fill it out during the episode, of course. And you guys already filled it out.
Why are you calling us?
This is one called Second Half Breakout. And I gotta say, guys, you can't pick a second half breakout who has already showcased all the things.
Yeah,
that
I
we
agree
want for the breakout.
That's shame them. You, and Eric, this will be quick because just say who they picked.
It's true,
not me. What are you talking about?
Seymour has been like picked up massively over the past 3-4 weeks.
But he hasn't. Ian Seymour has not yet had an official breakout. He's made like four starts.
That's exactly what I'm talking about.
And
though.
2 weeks ago, you were telling me that I was too invested in him.
We haven't done anything. Like everyone's like ignoring them. Like there's no way. Oh, this guy, Ian Seymour. Anyone who's listened to any of these podcasts for the past month knows about Ian Seymour and has them holding tight on their teams.
I love Eric. That you got cooked, Eric, when you were ready to cook us, because Eno and I wanted to go with Melton on that. I think and just Melton, as quickly
are
on
you
Melton.
Joking me?
Listen, he got a 182. Yes, because he got a 182 ERA and a 407 FIP, and I don't want people thinking, oh, I got to get rid of this guy because he's a fraud. No, he's not. He's an absolute ace. The 7.5 K per nine is far too low. 1.3 homer nine, too high. So I was just going to reiterate. And all I said was, dang it, Melton was mine too. And I picked somebody else.
Yeah,
so
but the other guy.
This is my point is if you look at Melton's overall numbers, he looks like a fade because he has 20% strikeout rate. And he looks
exactly.
But if you look at his numbers since he started throwing the cutter, he has a 27% strikeout rate. And that's pretty intense. So
did you just say he started throwing a cutter and had success?
Yes. He must have been listening to you.
No, not me. I'm not here. I'm just like, oh, please. Oh my God, this is beautiful.
Okay.
Look, I'm going to give you an actual one. I had someone that had one or two good starts, and I feel like that's not right. Okay. So going down the list here, I'm just ashamed. You guys should be ashamed of yourselves.
I'm not.
You know, with your Troy Melton, Eric Samolski.
Anytime I can talk about Troy Melton.
Yeah.
With your Ian Seymour, people know this.
And all right, I mean, if I go further out on a limb,
you want to say Detmers? I mean, look, the slider is back to being good again.
Yeah,
he was great,
it's just quick with
great.
Detmers. Just stick with him. Just stick with. I think just stick with him. Like, he's not going to win your league necessarily. I think he's better than a 4.5 ERA though, or whatever. It's like 4.30 or something right now. I think he's a 3.70 or better.
I'm going to tell you the breakout then. Okay, I'm going to tell you one that is like maybe actually that I'm not saying is necessarily going to happen. But I'm like, there are three names who I think have actually been bad and probably are on all your
waivers. Well, not one of the ones you have on the sheet.
I know. I'm getting rid of my Connor Prelip. I saw you guys.
No,
and I'm
not
like, you know
Connor
what?
Prelip.
Count. What?
Your pick of Joey Cantillo.
Oh, it does
who,
not
by
count.
The way,
it
is rostered
count.
In more
not
leagues
count.
Than Ian Seymour.
Wasn't going to be it. He should be. He should
and
be.
And also, just
that
so you know, has
up on the Melton and everything. Has
a 155 ERA in his last 30 innings, and you put him on the sheet.
Oh, you want to say last 30 innings? What was it for Troy Melton, you know? What's the last 30 innings? What is it like?
Eno's not the one talking to you. Eric is.
Okay.
Yeah. Why are you fighting Eno?
So does all of you guys. Okay, well, I'm trying to say.
I love this, by the way.
Three guys.
Me also,
too. Three of them.
Hold on. I'm going to draw the line. Because Ian Seymour has a 4.10 ERA.
Across.
Ian Seymour has a 4.10 ERA in the last month.
What, he had one bad start?
That is,
right?
Not, that is not somebody
he
who
He also doesn't throw
broken.
Hard. I mean, it's not a bad one.
Okay.
He doesn't throw hard.
12 strikeout game, three straight amazing
starts.
It's
the biggest head whack in
there.
Baseball.
Last two starts were
last start was not good right before the break.
Would make Scherzer blush.
Yeah, the head whack.
Okay. I'm going to tell you the three that I've got that I feel like are like, you know what? These are guys that I feel could be that for the second half. I'll tell you who they are and give these guys some more time after this break.
Knew it.
All right. So I'm going to tell you guys, these are breakout candidates in the second half. And I'm just going to go quickly through two of them because like, it's like, it doesn't really quite count because I've been saying forever. Maybe this is time for Brandon Sproat. That'd be so great. That'd be so wonderful. He has this ability, I think, the stuff. It's just, it needs to come together. It could happen. Second one is someone who's kind of had ups and downs, but hasn't quite gotten over the hump yet, which is Christian Scott, which is another former Met and everything. He's gone like 5.2 innings. He's close to it. I don't think the overall arsenal is so great, but there's a sweeper, cutter, four-seamer that could work. He could find a good groove with that, and that could be cool. I'm going to say Noah Schultz, because Noah Schultz was a high pedigree guy, Paul Spohr. And has a cutter from the left side that can be very good inside to right-handers. He has a sweeper that can miss bats. He's got a four-seamer sinker. He's got a wide mix. And he should have that big sweeper that gets whiffs a ton. I think that the Chicago White Sox are not the winless team that we thought. So he could get wins there. They're also pushing him a little bit more. Essentially, all of the rotation pieces there are getting innings, which is good. So I think that you give more time for Noah Schultz over the next 2.5 months. You might see something like an Ian Seymour game or a Reed Detmers game or guess what? A Troy Melton game. So that is my actual second half breakout pick.
I like that one.
I'm going to assume that Eno has one at the ready.
Oh, mine is Brandon Sproat. You know, one of the reasons I like Brandon Sproat is that in the last 30 days, he has a 33-10 strikeout to walk rate in 28 innings. And the location plus is perilously close to league average, which would be a real step up for him. I think that's been the actual point of concern for him. And what I see is from his mix is he's figuring out which pitches he can control, which pitches he needs to use when. And he's got a wide, nice 5-6 pitch mix. If he can dial in that command to even league average, I think he's going to have a really good time in the second half.
Oh, that would be so fun. And it does seem like the Brewers need a little bit of the help. They just got Lance McCullers, but that doesn't really seem like a real replacement. But you have Woody out now.
Harrison's
maybe
cooked.
There's longer time offer for Kyle Harrison. We hope that Henderson is healthy. So it does feel like Sproat is in there, especially above Robert Gasser at the moment. And we'll see what happens to Shane Drouhan. We're going to go to you, Spore, now. Who is your second half breakout?
Oh, wait. So that was Eno's bounce back, which is a guy who had a bad first half. I'm just saying, I'm just trying to be clear here, because like that's my second half breakout. And again, I just think he's better. He's pitched better than his results. He's fine. Stick with him. My second half bounce back, though, a guy who's had sucked that I think is going to be good, is Freddie Peralta. And I think this is a true buy low that you can get a significant discount on right now, because there's a lot of bad going on. The strikeout rate has cratered. The fastball Freddie has not looked good with his fastball. I just don't think he's this bad. I do wonder if there is some sort of Mets malaise that just kind of infects all their guys right now. But I am willing to take a pretty sharp discount and go for him. If you can't get that discount, don't go for Freddie. This is only if you can truly get a discount. I'm just going to trust the baseball card. The velocity hasn't cratered. I don't think his skills are completely off. I only watched like 3 or 4 of his starts this year, but I just don't think he's terrible now all of a sudden.
A little vibes-based analysis is he's been a streaky-ass dude. Like, yeah, you guys remember he's had some like amazing halves and some terrible halves.
Blake Snell's hot summer, the first time, masked the fact that Peralta was almost just as good.
That's absolutely right. And so that I think that's still there. Again, if the velo was down, 2-3 or something like that, and we were having reasons for concern beyond that, I think he's just stunk, but I don't think he stinks. So again, I think you can go out and get an actual fat discount on Peralta right now too, because he's been so bad.
Now, Eric, I'll give it up to you. You can do a new breakout, or you can do your second half bounce back. It's up to you. Have fun.
Well, after being shamed, I'm not going to do it. I will continue to mention that I do think Ian Seymour is in for a much better second half than first half now that he is fully in the starting rotation, even though the changeup hasn't been as good as it was last year. I like your second half breakout pick, but I will let you talk about that person who's currently injured.
No, you go ahead. I'm good with mine.
Well, no, it's okay, because I got somebody else. I am going to say that despite – also, in Yahoo formats, Jared Jones is only 33% rostered, and I think he's going to have a really good second half. And so just for the record
– I think we're all on the same page there.
No, I'm not.
I wrote an
article – next year for him.
That came out 2 weeks ago. Who I think were doing things that suggested good second halves, and then this pitcher went out and had two horrible starts. But I'm still going to say that there are things that Jack Perkins does that I like, and I know the home park is really bad for Jack Perkins, and so I'm not suggesting that. I think that maybe his upshot is that he becomes somebody that you're streaming on the road. But because I can't pick somebody who was good in any way, shape, or form, or has even flashed the ability to be good, because Nick will get mad at me, I'm going to talk about Jack Perkins, because I just think in general, like when you see Jack Perkins working well, you see quality secondary pitches and not a good fastball, but has 3 fastball variations that he can go to set up the secondaries that can be good in the sweeper, which can be a pretty good pitch. And so I see a world where this still continues to work, and maybe it only works on the road, but I think there's a better second half coming for Jack
Burns. All right.
I want to back your Seymour love just real quick, because I know people worry about young pitchers in general and Rays pitchers. 140 plus innings the last 2 years. I don't see any reason that they have to limit him. If anything, I think they should take the reins off of him a bit in the second half and let Seymour go. So if you're worried about any sort of volume piece there, I don't really see it from an inning standpoint.
Yes. You need him for sure. Jack Perkins was somebody I thought of for my stash. I just worry that like that park has like mental like
totally agree
aspects to it that are beyond just the physical dealing with it. So I think it may take him a year to sort of figure out something that works, getting some confidence and get on a roll going into next year. I'm going to steal your bounce back so that we can jump into regression, because we gotta somehow
go.
So yeah, I'm gonna steal your Eric your great Emmett Sheehan second half bounce back breakout, whatever. That was a great pick. The note that I had on him, it was the last two starts was the highest two start usage of the changeup all year, and this is infringing on some Bubba Chandler talk, which I think we might have one more round of Bubba Chandler talk in us, but the thing that's fascinating to me are right-handed pronators. You know, these guys like Sheehan and Bubba Chandler, they have these great changeups. They struggle to have great breaking balls. And I think in this era, we're just going to have them start using changeups right on right. If you look at Brian Baker's great story, I know he's a reliever, but Brian Baker used to throw an okay slider. He couldn't command it that well with the Baltimore. When he got to Tampa, they said, we looked at the model. Your changeup is just as good against lefties as it is against righties. He ditched the slider, and he became Brian Baker closer. So that's my prescription for Sheehan and for Bubba Chandler going forward. And I like that. I think Bubba's going to take longer because for whatever reason, he seems to hit his head against the wall over and over again. Sheehan is a little bit more reactive, I think, and changes things a little bit more start to start. And so I'll take Sheehan for the rest of the season. I think we're just going to see that changeup rate climb, and it might even help his velo climb too if he throws fewer fastballs. I think that'll be a good second half.
It just seems like he and Robleski got a freaky Friday a bit there, right? Given their skills to success shuffle there.
He's certainly one of those guys, Sheehan, that's just like, really, that's what his ratios are right now? Like, there's some weird games of too much pitch count going on or just getting bamboozled for like one or two innings. That's just kind of messing things up a bit. It feels he had the whole velocity problems, but that we've just kind of like, all right, this is fine. 94, 95, we're just going to sit there. And he's still very effective with it. I very much love the Sheehan one. The one that I wanted to mention, even though he hasn't, talk too much about what decisions he's made, I still want to say that Landon Roop's command is one of the better. It's one of the best skills I've seen of command at his age in the league. It's amazing the pitch separation he gets. I see very much of a Aaron Nola type in here with a big breaking ball with a really good commanded fastball, the changeup as well, the front hip endlessly with sinkers to left-handers, the cutter as well. I feel like the whole mix is really good and he spots it beautifully. So whether you want to call that a second half breakout, whether you want to call it a first half, even though he broke out a bit in the first half. And then I think the stuff of the Bible quote kind of messed him up a bit and all of that too. Yeah. So that could hold over, whatever. I think there is a very good pitcher there, I should mention at the very least.
Yeah, we should very quickly mention your actual pick on the document was Connor Prelip.
I already went over. Yes.
No. That was breakout. Yeah. We moved.
Well,
to the
we didn't actually really talk about that. And
I was going to bring that back. Okay. Don't worry. I got it. Okay. I second that. Is not as and bad as the
we should just note that
we're bull again.
Blister issues. Yeah. You never know when they're going to clear up. But Prelip is somebody I would have also picked for this as well.
I considered Lodolo because Lodolo's stuff is there. He's having a blister issue. And I just feel like the biggest thing has been these finicky little injuries, because if you look at his stuff is there, the command is gone. And like, I just feel like the command will come back when he's like healthy again. So if he does get healthy, I'd be super interested. And then that was my waiver claim. And I just wanted to bring up that in his last start, he threw the cutter more than he'd ever thrown it. And he threw the curveball fewer times than he'd ever thrown it. And the reason he said he did that was because he saw that Ernie Clement was sitting curveball and that they were all swinging at all every single curveball they threw in the zone. So I just like that thinking process where he's like, I have a big weapon in the curveball, but if they're going to sit on that, if they're going to be like anticipating it all the time, then I need to be able to throw these other pitches. And he's gotten to the cutter to a place where he had a great game against the Toronto Blue Jays where, you know, he threw his curveball like seven times. And it used to be Landon Roep had great games when he threw his curveball like 20 times.
And we had that.
So
back
brain does work on some things. Okay. Good to know.
All right. I am going to also just really mention Framber Valdez had his curveball back finally in last start. Mm-hmm. And I remembered that a thing existed called ambergris. So I made it Framber Bliss. And I realized what that actually was. And I regretted the SP Roundup title.
That's so funny, dude.
But, I'm looking it up right now.
And I'm like, Framber Bliss, beautiful. It's right there. And then I woke up to Justin's graphic. I was like, oh, right.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep.
Why do you know what ambergris is?
Because, you know,
I randomly knew what it was too, but that is so funny.
I just
knew
it existed.
Isn't it illegal in the States too, or something? I think that's how I learned about it. You guys can go
Google that on your own if you'd like. We are going to move on here to second half regression candidates. And this is a really fun one. Mine is blank because honestly, what Eno said and what Eric said, I just say, like, that Toby, who's doing really well, that is the regression candidate.
Is the
number
one. I
have another interesting one that I want to talk about, but I'm going to let you guys go first. Paul, I love yours. Yours is my favorite pick here of the lot.
See, I got one that isn't as obvious, and I don't say that as like a slam on, you know, he picked the right ones. But I got Emerson Hancock coming back to earth a bit. Not necessarily a colossal fall off, but he's maintained these strong ratios for the first half. I just don't think he's a 3.17-1.01 ERA whip combo. I think he's more like a mid to upper threes guy and a representative whip that'll go up with that. And I think we've already started to see that a little bit. I think we'll see more of it in the second half, especially as he finishes up his first full season in the majors too, which I think is a big deal that sometimes we never really know. Like, he's not some baby, he's 27, but that first full year in the majors is always tough come those dog days in August. So I think we're going to see a lesser version of Emerson Hancock. And if you could sell high on him, I would certainly consider it. Otherwise, just ride it out, because I don't think he's going to totally tank. You're still going to win for having drafted him or picked him up on the waiver wire. But I do think it'll be worse, closer to a 4 ERA with a decent whip.
All right, Eno, what we got here? Just name them all.
No, I like that one because his arm slot is also dropping and there's some like weird things going on with his stuff. He's becoming more of a sidearmer, should make him a problem against lefties should become more of a problem for him going forward. And so I considered him, but I just thought I'm just going to name all the low hanging fruit just so that, I'm just going to blast them all out because
these are
guys who have basically, if you have a sub 20% strikeout rate, I found this, I did the research on this. If you have a sub 20% strikeout rate, you are a 1 in 124 shot at being a top 15 pitcher. You are a 1 in 60 shot of being like a top 50 pitcher. You're like a 1 in 10 shot or 1 in 30 shot of being a top 75 pitcher. So these guys have all been top 75 pitchers so far. And I just don't think they will continue to be because they are all sub 20% strikeout pitchers. Eduardo Rodriguez, Nick Martinez, Mike McGreevy, and Jonathan Lambert.
Jonathan Lambert.
Well,
he's a journalist.
I didn't mean to take any away from anyone, but I'm just
thinking of
if you want a one stat, like, strikeout rate's not bad. Walk is better, but like the more important part of strikeout minus walk is strikeout because if you're like a 20% strikeout rate with a 5% walk rate, it's actually better to be 25% Yeah.
I totally agree.
What's really funny to me, everybody listening to The Craft right now might be like, huh, hold on a second. I remember on an episode of The Craft, Eno and Nick were talking about exactly this of like, hey, these are these guys that are under a 20% strikeout rate. And it's really rare for them to have that good of a season at it. And I said, okay, that's fair, but that's the strikeout rate they have now. And that doesn't mean that they're going to end the season that way.
No,
you were the two guys you brought up in that, among others. One was Wroblewski, I believe.
Yeah.
The other was your sleeper pick, Troy Melton, the breakout guy.
And they both have stretched. I mean, that's really frustrating as an analyst, because it's true. These things are supposed to be sticky and they're supposed to be stable really quickly, but sometimes they grow, you know, sometimes these pitchers grow and change. And
well, how do you conflict? How do you like compare it for Melton specifically? Obviously, I'm a Tigers homer, but how do you compare that with how much strikeout stuff he had shown in the minors? Because that's what kind of kept me bought in, was that it was a small sample and I wasn't going to judge him yet until he really kind of got going.
I think you have to look at what we've seen in past track records, and I think Melton had shown strikeout upside. I think you also if everybody had the time to do an individual pitcher deep dive, you could say, okay, this guy's strikeout rate is 17%, but if you look at how he uses this pitch in these counts, and you could see that there's some strikeout upside here, so there's a path forward for him to get more strikeouts if he starts to go to the curveball more against lefties or whatever it is, and then you could say, okay, yes, this guy is in a position to be a regression candidate because of this. However, if he starts to do this thing, then there's a path forward. And
you can't rank him based on if he might do this
for thing. Sure. Yeah, you can't.
Yeah. Well, okay. That's actually the fun argument, though, is because the one things I really like doing is getting guys who I'm fine with. Like Melton, even though he didn't have the highest strikeout rate, was still performing well because he was commanding well. He was locating
and
well.
Going
he
deep
was,
in games too.
And he had stuff that did suggest that he should be getting a little bit more of a strikeout rate. I think with like the wider arsenal, with four seamers being 96 plus, with a slider, cutter, changeup, etc. They actually splitter lefties. And then the thing about Melton is that you look at him and go, right, a lot of the times the guys who are able to get through innings are gonna add something. They're gonna tweak with this. You know, they're not a command specialist for not tweaking, right? So generally those are the ones
guys
in my
have head big
that
arsenals,
I feel confident
like maybe they're
gonna make a switch at some point.
Yeah. And if they have a five pitches, maybe they can feature one of those pitches or improve.
Right. Or maybe the cutter gets more, right? Exactly. That kind of thing. And Melton, as someone who's just induced a ton of weak contact a lot, it just denied in like the floor to me is not the same as your Nick Martinez, for example. Sorry, Nick. I love it. You're doing amazing things. I love that you just had an All-Star game appearance. That was so cool. And that's not
at least Nick Martinez has a 4% walk rate. The reason I said at the beginning that Erod is the king of this, he has neither good 17K, 8 walk. Like neither end of it is good. Yeah. He is the most magician guy going right now. And I love Erod. I've liked
him
his whole
Eric's,
career. I root
Eric's
for him,
name
but it's terrible.
Is really interesting on this one because in the context of what we're talking about. Because
oh, man. So,
some minor league stuff that's a little bit better. There's some Arsenal. He's young. You could
Yeah, let's talk
him,
Jake Bennett.
I tend to agree
with
him.
Yeah, let's talk Jake Bennett. But before I do, I have to say, Spore, I remember the text you sent me. When you read my blurb in Eduardo Rodriguez after writing your blurb in Eduardo Rodriguez, which was like, he's not this bad. And we're patting ourselves in the back for that.
And we, the way we said it was like identical too. It was crazy how identical were on it. And we're technically right. We'll check in October if he blows all this.
Doesn't matter.
So
we've already
far,
won.
We're so
matter.
Correct.
Drop him if it's bad. Eric Samulski, talk to us about Jake Bennett, because I know that you've been really on the Jake Bennett train for a while. We've been exchanging after like every single start that he's had. Tell us more.
Yeah, so I like Jake Bennett. And so this isn't like a, hey, Jake Bennett is bad. But this is a, you know, Jake Bennett has a 2.64 ERA. And I don't see that continuing. And so I think there's going to be regression for Jake Bennett. I do like, as we've talked about, fastball up, change up, low and away as a lefty against righties. He is a swatch. That is very useful. And you saw Noah Cameron basically do the same thing for the entire year last year.
With the worst,
well, yeah, all
with
year,
worst,
really.
And with fastball, yeah.
And that also doesn't factor in the fact that Jake Bennett has like over seven feet of extension on his fastball. So even though it's a 93-mile-an-hour fastball, it's like a 95, 96-mile-an-hour fastball. And so that
and Boston's Denver, KC.
A little bit.
Yeah,
I think that this is more just, look, it's been four really good starts. There was a start against Toronto in here that was also fine. But the four really good starts have been against the Rockies, the Angels, the White Sox without Murakami in the lineup, and they were struggling a little bit, and the Yankees without Judge and Grisham in the lineup, and that was when the Yankees, I mean, they're maybe still struggling to hit a little bit, but when the Yankees were really struggling. And that's not to take to say, I don't think we're going to see results quite like we're at right now. The other guy that I had also, I just checked just to make sure, since May 13th, which is a Wednesday, which is why I picked May 13th. It's basically about 2 months, in the last 2 months. Brandon Young has a sub 20% strikeout rate. I have never been on the Brandon Young train. I don't believe it. I know some people really like Brandon Young. The only reason he wasn't my pick is because in Yahoo formats, he's only rostered in like 29% of leagues. So I don't think a lot of people, I guess, in all formats are really buying in. But I am, I'm not on the Brandon Young train, and so I expect regression there. And another guy I'll just say over the last 2 months, and I know that Nick has pointed out he's had some good starts in there, but a sub 18% strikeout rate and essentially a 9% walk rate for Michael King over the last 2 months. And that has led to a 470 Sierra over the last 2 months. And I know we don't look at things
like that. It's a 450 Sierra for the year.
And Nick has talked a lot about like individual starts and King's changeup in particular and how often he gets whiffs on that. And there was a long stretch where he wasn't getting any whiffs. And I know it's been a little bit better, but it just King is somebody where we might not see it click back in.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, with King specifically, it's – all right, he's a crossbody pitcher. So when he does get that logged in, that actually is, it's kind of like Freddy Peralta in a way. Like it's been bad, and it could just be great. Like that is one where if you have a good rotation and Michael King is the one that's annoying you, I would drop, even though it could break out, because he is the biggest risk of hurting you constantly, right? It's like why I dropped Sandy Alcantara in late April or so, because I was like, you know what, my rotation's great, and this is the one problem. Even though he's doing much better now, I feel fine about that because at the time I had to, you know, I got other guys in and I won those.
Yeah, you
got to
make choices.
Hey,
yeah.
Nick, what if you have Michael King on a team where you also have Bubba Chandler and Tatsuya Imai?
Well, you know what? Next year is looking great.
Wait.
Sell.
There's been some skill issues, but it's still a 3.41 ERA and a 1.15 whip. Like you're still winning with King's results so far. And I agree with y'all's concerns about these skills coming back up to get him.
I would just be careful on the road or something. Like there might be a start on the road, like where you know, like one start on the road against the Dodgers. In the past, you might be like, it's Michael King, I'll start him.
But I'll keep him in there. Don't set it and forget it with him, I think is the better strategy than like outright cutting him preemptively.
Because on your situation, of course, is the king without his crown. Right now.
Yay.
Yes.
Okay. My regression candidate is going to surprise you guys. I'm wondering if you can guess what this is. The last 12 games, this pitcher has a 1.98 ERA, a 1.03 whip, a 7% walk rate, and a 25% K rate with a 9-0 record across about 73 innings.
Aaron Ashby.
Okay. He just had starts against the Yankees, Angels, and the Mets to give you guys some help. He's averaging about 10 whiffs a game in that time, but really specifically he had an 11 strikeout game in Coors on June 23rd. And
Robbie I imagine Ray.
Robbie Ray.
Want me to push him up. What is it, you know?
Robbie Ray.
Robbie Ray.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's not Robbie Ray. Robbie Ray is really hilarious, by the way. He's just I'm trying, guys. I'm trying everything.
Sinkers.
It is Sonny Gray.
Is it Sonny? It's Sonny Gray.
Got it, Eric. There you go. That to me is he's the perfect regression candidate because this is what Sonny Gray does. Sonny Gray, my whole bit on him is that he's mostly sunny and sometimes gray. And it's just that is who he is. And it's often when the sweeper's working really well to opposite handed batters is when he's getting the backdoor sinkers working to righties for put away as a put away pitch. It's just one of the things he goes in and out. And he's on a very good run at the moment. I'm really happy for him. He only has one game above 300 runs this entire season, which is kind of bonkers to me. I don't think he's actually pitching so well. And the fact of the matter is that across his last 9 games, 5 of them have fewer than 10 whiffs is a little shaky in my view.
I had to write him up for like trade stuff. And I was just like, the sweeper's still there, but the strikeout rate's down.
So that's my regression candidate for someone that is a bigger name that a lot of people actually would attach saying, no, this is great. This is
he's doing like the weak contact thing instead of getting
it's not
he is, throwing the, he is throwing the cutter more. I will also, the fact that he wasn't an all-star is ridiculous, but that's okay.
Agreed.
I think we should combine the next two things.
Oh, I've got this under control.
Waiver claims and yet to debut prospects who could basically be waiver claims.
Here we go.
I think we should combine.
So here we go. Yet to debut prospects with favorite stashes and waiver claims. That is the last three we're going to do in a rapid fire, but we're going to do that after this break. Okay. There's one person here that I know does not talk at all. Eno, tell me your yet to debut prospect to be most relevant and also the favorite stash of 2027. And it could kind of be combined here a little bit.
I just watched the Futures game and Gage Wood really stood out for me. I know that Ryan Sloan was in that game, but I think he's got a further road to hoe. Gage Wood is on the Phillies. They need this guy. Painter was a dud, and they'll either trade Gage Wood for like Scooble, you know, like, and go
shut
for
up.
It, or they'll put Gage Wood in the because I don't actually think Scooble will be traded. I'm just saying
they'll either
trade Gage Wood for something they really need, and he'll get an opportunity somewhere else, or he'll play. I think he was among the really exciting prospects in the Futures game. He was the one that's closest. And my favorite stash was just Bubba Chandler, because I just, you know, we talked about this a little bit, so I don't have to go into it, but he just has all the tools. Like, he has a slider, he has a changeup, he has the fastball, and none of the like command is like, oh, but he has, you know, he has like 20 command on these pitches. Like everything is there. I think he's just Edward Scissorhands. He just doesn't know how to do it. He doesn't know how to put it together.
I think he wants to figure it out too. Like, and this is a soft factor, right, that he pick up from a few interviews or whatever. But Bubba Chandler comes across to me as somebody who is trying to get better, trying to learn the things that will make him better. I don't know if he goes to an off-season academy or not, or starts working with Skeensy or whatever. But like, I agree with you. I can't quit this guy, even though I've been off of him this year.
Yeah. He liked my idea of more same-sided changeups. He just hasn't really done it. So I don't know what that means. But
and do you have a different waiver claim that's not Landon Roop? Because those two guys haven't been mentioned yet from Paul and Eric.
I don't know. I was like stymied by it because there were so many players on it that I was like, I'll take that guy.
I mean, Ryan Weathers, as you were mentioning before the podcast, is a 38%. And that is actually a really good pick, I think, for just because, he has these weird starts. I did a video on one of them that was just like, come on, the sequencing is a little bit off. It wasn't home runs as a problem there. Ryan Weathers is essentially Luzardo light in my view. And
it's a great comp.
He's someone that I would continue to start in my leagues. I would imagine that would be your pick, you know, is that right?
Landon Roop?
Weathers.
Ryan Weathers, yeah. Who has Cade Cavalli? Tell me about Cade Cavalli.
Cade Cavalli is Eric. What have we got?
Yeah. So I think everybody made a really big deal when the velocity, quote unquote, fell in the start below, right before the break. But that was only because the velocity in the start before against Boston was way up. So his velocity
hadn't really fallen.
And so I think, as Nick and I talked about on one of the podcasts before, he also had to be moved up to start in heat before the suspension kicked in. Mm-hmm. The cutter is a really good pitch for him. I like the fact that he's added that. I think that there is potential for velocity increase because we've seen it happen. If the velocity increase holds and the cutter stays, I think you could see a real breakthrough. If only one of those two things happens, I think you will see improved performance. And he was already somebody who was liable to have some really strong stretches because the curveball is a really good pitch. It was just his only pitch. But I think adding the cutter now raises the floor in addition to allowing us to keep that upside. So I have Cade Cavalli as my waiver claim. My yet-to-debut prospect, I cheated because this guy technically has one appearance and he pitched four innings for the Atlanta Braves. It's Owen Murphy. And the Braves just announced today that he is starting on Saturday right out of the All-Star break. So I think that he's going to get a chance to win a spot in the rotation for the Braves. I don't know that this first start is going to be a true like start. He may just go three or four, and I know AJ Smith-Shawver is coming back, but I think that there are openings in that rotation, and we've seen guys like Bryce Elder and Martin Perez. I think there's some regression already happening or will happen. Murphy has shown swing and miss in the minors. I think that, you know, he is an intriguing enough prospect who will be on a good team, and so that's my kind of as yet to debut prospect. And then I seconded Connor Prelip as a stash for 2027. I think there's some interesting things happening with his curveball usage. I think the changeup has the potential to be better next year as well. Yes. And so I think that Connor Pritup could take a big step forward for next year.
Yeah, the curve. I mean, really, as you were saying, you know, I this is something I think about a ton, is that 85 mile per hour curveballs or higher are just like insane. If you can get to that two plane of at least like negative 10 each, if you get to that on both of them, they're like 85 and above. That is Key Cavalli, but he was throwing at 87, 88, and it was just like, what? And all of a sudden he's throwing 12 cutters instead of like four that weren't even labeled properly by Savant in the previous start, and it drove me nuts. And then you that's a new pitcher. And now Cavalli is throwing the cutter more, which is great, but he didn't have that velocity. And I think the last two starts, not just one, but I could be wrong on that. My memory isn't quite as good right now. And I have Jake Crumpler writing for me on the weekends. I got to double check things now. But it is a big thing for me that Cavalli needs to be up in that velocity, because the four-seamer getting whiffs was a big difference maker in that one against the Red Sox. And if he's not doing that, then it's still just a good curveball and nothing else. I mean, the cutter is a helpful thing. That means he's better, but he's not quite the one I'm loving until then. Paul, what do we got from you here?
All right, so pickings are slim because we said 40% on the roster or rostered on the platform of your choice. So I went with the main event over at the NFBC, which 15 team, very well picked over. But I went with Spencer Miles. I know they said, I think the latest update said shifted back to the bullpen because he did pitch in the bullpen. But now he's confirmed to start the first start out of the break too. And I just don't trust Max coming back. I'm sorry. I love Maxie and I hope he can, but I'm not putting any stock in that right now. You know, Bieber isn't Mr. Healthy either. I'm not wishing any ill on anybody. Gausman's 35 though as well. So like there could be avenues there for Spencer Miles. I've liked what I've seen. I've only seen two of his starts this year, so I don't have a deep backlog on him, but I think somebody like him getting some opportunities in your deep 15s, you can take a shot on Spencer Miles with Toronto.
Beautiful. And as far as a stash for next year,
That's going to be Jackson Jobe for both my stash and prospect yet to debut this year, because it was for this year, not forever. He is coming off of TJ. Be careful, as always, folks, but he could be the Yuri Perez, Kyle Bradish this year, who tricks us into overrating him next year with like a great 7-start run down the road. Or what I actually want is him to come and close for the Tigers. But again, that might be a little bit too much for somebody coming off TJ. He's throwing like 150 miles an hour in his rehab starts right now. He looks amazing. I'm trying not to get too hyped on it, but Jobe was still a premium prospect. You highlighted earlier, Nick, I like my pedigree and I still love Jackson Jobe.
Yeah, I love that. So I will say for the second half, 40% or fewer, I can't believe that Logan Henderson's at 40%. So that's bonkers to me. You have to go and get that one. That should be like 80% in my view, something along those lines. Gage Jump, I am going to throw in there because I think Gage Jump is a solid pitcher, even though Sacred Verde exists. Of course, throwing in Sacramento, not fun. I love that Spore is putting it into the rundown, even though I just said it
just for posterity.
But you're posting the notes somewhere, I don't know. Gage Jump to me, I think a really good fastball. And then the fact he's throwing tons of strikes with it and same with the slider already is a really cool thing. I am curious to see kind of how he develops over time as well. Yet to debut prospects and favorite stash with 2027. For 2027, I put some dope prospect who comes up. I don't know. That guy. Because that's what it was last year. It was like McLean and it was Schlittler and it was Mizorowski came up at some point during the year. And then Chase Burns did and all these guys. Yes, the class right now doesn't look as pretty. But at the same time, Cam Schlittler was not on our radars, you know, massively. Right. You know, McLean shot up as the season went on, right? It was a lot of those situations, and I'm sure there'll be someone that just blows us away. As far as yet to debut prospect, I'm going to say Carlos Agrande in the Mason Miller clause, because it doesn't necessarily mean that it's as a starting pitcher. However he comes up, he's going to just be dope, and that's really, really fun. It also could be a situation that he is injured right now, but it doesn't seem like a serious injury. And then they could bring him back as a starter workload if there are more concerns with the Yankees. They don't get what they need from the trade deadline. We could see something like that.
Couldn't he be part of the deadline? Sorry to interrupt you, but couldn't Lagranier also be part of the deadline where he gets traded somewhere to go
start? No, they will not do that.
You're not even a Yankees fan anymore. What do you care?
How is Carlos Lagranier not the answer for them?
I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just saying he's a young guy. They're going to be trading for stuff. They might see it fit to trade him.
Well, you know what? If you guys want to find out about that, you can actually watch Paul Spore and I on Monday for the trade deadline show. I'll be doing the list on the next day on Tuesday. So that Monday, we will be live.
Not this Monday. That's August 3rd.
The next one, when it is the trade deadline, just come on to Pitcher List on the YouTube channel. We'll be.
But it's August 3rd this year, not the 31st. August 3rd.
That Monday, Spore and I will be there covering all the news, everything that happens, and then we'll not include Carlos Lagrange. Guys, we got to go. Eno, Spore,
I got some breaking news coming out tomorrow. Look for my breaking news. I got to go to run to a meeting to discuss it right now with all the editors. So,
I wow. Okay. I don't even know what this is. Goodbye.
I'm excited.
Spore, Eric, you know, we got to make sure we do something like this at the end of the year, all this kind of stuff.
It's amazing.
I love you all. Thanks so much for being here. But that is it for this episode of The Craft. My name is Nick Pollock.
See everybody.
Pitching again next week. Boom. Guys,
frankly, an hour 15.